Hello, everyone. I'm Davey Jags, and this is Sparkle On. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth, and nothing can ever dim your light. I started Sparkle during some of the darkest times in my life, but there was always something that I think, like, I've always been kind of this person to chase things, and I always described kind of this like gut feeling or something that I loved a lot as that fire inside me. And that's kind of where the concept of Sparkle was developed. It was very tied to my running career. It was very tied to essentially my addiction to that running. But I think running for me was just a sport that helped me discover who I was at my core, which is very competitive. It is very committed. It's loyal, has a little bit of perfectionism issues, is crazy. But that's me. And I think at the end of the day, like, I don't really believe that people don't have a sparkle. Everyone has a sparkle. It just looks and takes different forms. And everyone always goes through things that essentially can dim their light. But you can always get it back. That's why I'm such an advocate for mental health. That's why I do believe in justice. And I get mad when people's sparkle is dim due to violence, racism, all those things. And when I really thought about like what sparkle means to me and groups of people that exude that shine, I thought of advocates. I thought of change makers, storytellers, entrepreneurs, advocates. And at the end of the day, the things that helped me get my sparkle back in those dark moments were people's stories, were people's voice. And that's why content, media, movies, books, representation is so important. And we're living in a time where that's being silenced. And so I truly believe that sparkle is more important than ever. I kind of wanted this to be a day where I kind of just chat and you guys get a little bit into the chaos of my mind. And you know, the creative process is not linear, and neither is the blueprint of my life. And just wanted to share like some stories that I think when I really try to get inside my intuition and pursue creative projects that are in alignment with myself, what it actually translates for when I'm building Sparkle as a brand and company and show and whatever form it ends up taking. Because it has taken many iterations over the years, partly because Sparkle for me was so much of a healing process. And I do believe this show is about healing. It's about discovering who we are. It's about reclaiming the things that we may have lost in order to shine super brightly. So the other day I went to go see Wicked. Just like everyone is holding space for Defying Gravity because it is so aligned with what's happening in the world right now and how especially young people are questioning things, but it's contained into this woman friendship. And if you know me personally, you know that I am obsessed with women friendship stories. I think that it can be such a complicated and nuanced topic, and it's a different kind of pain if you go through a friendship breakup. And Wicked is a story that I heard about when I was younger because I used to be obsessed with The Wizard of Oz. Me and my sister used to wear our ruby red slippers like way too long. But ironically, my dad and I was Dorothy and he was the lion, and my sister was almost born on Halloween. And like at 12:20. And so like I loved The Wizard of Oz. Like I thought Oz was real. And then when I got older and found out Wicked was this prequel, I was like, what the hell is a prequel? Like, I think that's so cool. And I think it's part of the things that made me fall in love with storytelling. So it's the eighth grade, and like my school was combined as like 7 through 12. So like junior high and high school is one. So like eighth grade, I'm on that cusp of getting into high school. But like I remember seeing boys with mustaches and I was like, what the hell is going on? Like I was scared of the world. But we're getting ready for our spring chorus. We're required to take chorus. And the music teacher introduces us to the song For Good. Okay. Part of the reason I fell in love with storytelling is because of song lyrics. I'm obsessed with The Counting Crows. I'm obsessed with The Killers. Britney Spears, like, don't even get me started of me running around as a five-year-old, like, singing Lucky up and down the hallway in my bathing suit top. Like, I wanted to be Britney Spears. But anyways, back to the whole Wicked thing. I'm reading these lyrics of For Good for the first time, and I think it's the most beautiful piece of artwork that I have ever come across. So when the music teacher says that she's announcing a solo for the piece, I'm like, I really want it. Like, I really want this solo. Slight problem, I can't sing for my life. If you give me enough of margaritas, like, I do think I'm Whitney Houston. But no, like, I can't sing. I could never sing. I wanted to be in a pop star. I think in another life, I would have been a pop star if I could sing. I want to be the Brown Taylor Swift. I can't. I shouldn't say I can't because my father raised me better than that. But, like, the likelihood to make a career out of it is super, super slim. Anyways, little eighth grade Davey tried out for the solo. Guys, and if you are any of my friends from the eighth grade, like, I'm literally thinking of my friend JC in particular. Like, I know you guys were trying not to laugh at me. And to be honest, like, maybe you should have to, like, bring me down a little bit. But to be honest, that's not what Sparkle's about. My voice was cracking at every point. And as I was singing, I actually felt my heart breaking because with each word, I was like, I'm not getting this solo. And it sucked because I was like, how do I be a part of this amazing story if I don't have the solo? And I think about it now, like, Wicked is still one of my favorite soundtracks. For Good is one of my favorite songs of all time. The Story is absolutely my favorite Broadway play. And now the movie's out. And the creators of the movie made it so special because they're making it two parts. And I don't know. I've just been, like, ever since watching that film and how beautiful it was and how I'm sure a lot of women could see themselves in Glinda or Galinda and Alphaba in many ways. For me, like, Glinda's wardrobe, sign me up. All pink, everything. Like, yeah, that's me. But as far as, like, Alphaba fighting to have a place in the world and then speaking up when no one else is agreeing with her, like, yes, I resonate with that. But yeah, I think the point of when I think about Wicked and what it means to me is really that when I was in eighth grade, it's this moment of my childhood where I can always say that I'm a person that tries. And what I would encourage everyone to do is that, is exactly that. Like, try even when you know that it might not result in other people's depiction of success. So success, meaning if everyone assumes it means to get the solo, great. But that's not really what music class was supposed to be about, right? Because what I gained from that experience was, yes, I learned that I actually have really bad stage fright, which is really ironic. But what it taught me was my love for story and art and music and how that informs one another and why we even see this movie like Wicked, this show that's been around for numerous years, bringing people together, having power in times where a lot of people feel like they don't have power. And that is exactly what trying out for that solo was for me and why it's important, because it helps you discover something new about yourself, even if it doesn't mean getting the solo in the eighth grade chorus. So I thought we would hold space for that today. This is kind of just me rambling about different things, like I said. Okay, but as far as like how I did say that I am a little bit of a perfectionist, I've mentioned it on this freaking show so many times. My father is going to be like, Davey, you're always repeating the same stories. Come up with something new. But I have an obsessive personality about me. So anyways, when we talk about perfection, I don't think I'm a type A person. No. I know I'm not a type A person. But I can be. And I don't actually know, and I would love to have an expert on here that can speak to that, but like the difference between being able to be a type A person or if you just have like obsessive issues. And I think with running, like that's what it was for me. A lot of times I am someone who's pretty manic. Like I can write all night and then crash. And I've worked on that a lot. And I know the best version of myself is someone that tries to live with routine and balance, and it actually is better for me creatively. But I also really have started to embrace the part of myself that doesn't try to be perfect. So, for example, I have a really amazing community in the entrepreneurial and art space, whether that's in New York, whether that's in LA. And I think that's because I'm a people person. But when I told one of the leaders of this running group that I'm a part of in LA, Darius of Run Tech Club, I said, I wanted to start a podcast and I wanted it to follow along of this marathon journey when I was training for the Chicago Marathon. And I think that for me, it was because I wanted a little way to like have a video diary of reclaiming something that was once lost for me. But when I said it, I wanted to start a podcast, like, yeah, it would have to be like, okay, starting it within the time frame of the podcast or of the marathon training, but not like 2 weeks later. And I was working a really demanding job at the time, so it was really ambitious. But it happened. Like, it just, like, I pulled it together, and we had a cool launch party, and, like, right in the middle of Abbot Kinney. Like, if you listen to the first episode, you'll see it all there. But it didn't necessarily give me the time to think through the holistic vision of the show. You know, I used equipment that I had, so like the quality wasn't perfect. And I didn't even really come to the conclusion that Sparkle and the guests meant change makers, right? Like, I think everyone that I curate for the show and invite on has had some sort of storyline of going through some sort of adversity or burnout and how they overcome it, because it's supposed to inspire listeners to discover, reclaim their sparkles. And by the way, I know everyone out here is like, I want to inspire someone. And everyone's like, you better create something more than wanting to inspire someone. Like, I don't think anything's wrong with that. You should want to inspire people. Like, if your life's mission is to wake up every day and inspire people, you are not doing anything wrong. I think that's super special. So yes, I think what I'm doing is special. But as far as building the show, like I really was like, okay, like I was going to hit certain beats of types of guests that could speak to women in sports, training for a marathon, running, you know, the correlation between entrepreneurship and sport and things like that, exercise, all those things. And I'm like, that's a really niche audience. Like, part of the reason I walked away from the sport of running for the longest time was because I was tired of being one thing and I knew I was more than one thing. And so when I had the freedom and the bandwidth mentally and logistically, like I just started bringing on people I thought were freaking cool. And I started to have some of the best conversations ever. I got to capture those conversations and that was magic. And I got to learn so much and I'm still learning so much. And I think the show really came alive because I didn't go and try to make it be something that it, when it could have been more than that, right? And so needless to say that I think if I would have spent time planning out the show more, I might have saved myself some money. Like logistically, like if that's something that if you're looking to build a podcast and looking to market something or put out a product, those are very real things that I would go back and change slightly if I could. Maybe I would have taken more time to resonate with what exactly it is, and, but the timeline of that would have been longer. And I think mentally for me, I could have ended up psyching myself out because there have been many times over the last 5 or 6 years that I've been like, I want to start a podcast. And I truly, truly don't believe I was ready until I actually did, but I wasn't ready. Like if I was in a classroom, a professor might tell me like, hey, Davey, you are not ready to start this company. Like this is my passion. This is, you know, my vision. This is living my truth. But at the end of the day, like it's still art that I'm translating into what I hope to be something like my full-time job. And I don't think of my career as a job. And it's just technicalities at that point. But like when I do work, it's because I love it. That's probably one of my biggest wish for people is that they can do that. And I think, you know, no matter what you do, even if you love it, it will always feel like work sometimes. But the reward and the fulfillment you get at the end of it is so worth it. And you know, I think I've tried the whole, let's be honest. I never really actually tried the corporate America thing. We're not going to pretend that I have. I have wanted that for myself. I have wanted to be like, can't I just be that person? Like make a steady income, move my way up the ranks. It's never worked for me. I don't really see it working for me, not because I don't think I'm capable, but it's almost like, ironically, like I've never really felt like part of it, like in my place. Like I've never felt like I could fit in is I guess what I'm trying to say. And even like at schools, like after Xavier, like I definitely didn't feel like I fit in there, even though from someone from the outside, like they would say that I did. Never felt like I fit in on my cross country team. Never quite felt like I fit in the business school. Then I went and did my master's at Sarah Lawrence, which was a complete 180. That was an art school, like totally opposite of Xavier. And I never felt like I fit in. And it wasn't until I was in a writing class. Oh, let me tell you where I really didn't fit in. It was a writing class with one of my favorite people in the world, Heather Harpum. It was writing for humor and joy. Mind you, my family has grown up telling me, Davey, you don't think anything's funny. Davey, you're not funny. And that is because my mom and my sister, they're the same person. If you watch their facial expressions, they are the same. And they sit there and they watch SNL on the iPhone like over breakfast and just laugh and laugh for hours. It is actually the best thing. But when I come home and it's just me and I'm hanging out with my mom, like, I literally am like, mother, you wish my sister Mira was here. And she's like, oh my God, Davey, no, I don't. I go, Mira is your favorite daughter. Yes, you do. And like, this actually happened a few weeks ago. I came home and I'm like laying in between my parents in their bed, and my mom's trying to show me something funny. I don't laugh, because the reality is I don't think a lot of things are funny. One, because I don't think they're funny. And two, a lot of things actually go over my head. Okay. And I'm laying in between them and I'm like, mom, Mira's your favorite daughter. And she's like, no, she's not. And my dad's like, yes, she is. So then we call Mira. She totally agrees. It's so embarrassing. But back to the story about writing for humor and joy. Heather Harpum, I don't know what I was going through that day. We were going through my pages, and I think it was just obvious, probably from my body language, the questions I was asking, and all of a sudden, Heather's so theatrical. I love her. I wish my friend Zoe were here to like do an impersonation of her, because Zoe's like a theater kid and can do it better than I can. She goes, Davey, she goes, you belong here. And I like looking at her and I'm like, what is happening? Like, was she listening in on my therapy sessions recently? Because I was sitting there thinking, like, I don't know, there were so many talented writers at Sarah Lawrence. And I'm someone that was just like silly little 19-year-old at Xavier, like typing in her diary. And that's what I submitted to Sarah Lawrence. I'm pretty sure I even wrote in my Sarah Lawrence application, I don't actually want to be a writer. I just want to finish this stupid project that I started and I don't know what to do with. I'm pretty sure that it got me in somewhere, some application. It either got me into like a writer's residency or Sarah Lawrence. Maybe both. I don't really remember. But she just started like yelling at me in like the best way possible, like telling me, you deserve to be here. You are here. That means you're a writer. And even if you weren't here doing this program, you would still be a writer. And that is rare, like very real. Like if you write, you're a writer. And just because if it's not your job, like doesn't make you not a writer. Like at the end of the day, we are all storytellers, because story is all we have to keep going and to keep passing on. And that's what kind of makes our legacy. And I don't know, like, I feel like I've had to keep telling myself that. And now, because like for a long time, I didn't know how to call myself a writer. Then I didn't know how to call myself a producer. And when you can own, and they are labels, so like do with that what you will. But like when you can own some of these titles and maybe write down a list of 10 of different things you are. I am a daughter. I am a runner. I am a writer. I am loud. You start like sitting up taller, standing up taller, and you also start believing that you can do it. And by doing it, I don't mean making money off of it. I don't mean like being famous off of it. Maybe those things will be an effect of that, right? But what it will do is actually help you hone in and just live your life completely authentically and kind of reveal what you're capable of. And I feel so weird speaking from this perspective of like I'm doing it, but that doesn't mean I don't struggle with it. Like, the fact that I was coming in here today to do a solo session, like, I was freaking the fuck out. Like, I was like, what does that even mean? What the hell am I going to talk about? And to be honest, I still don't know what I'm talking about. But I think, you know, even the other day, I was having this, like, awesome feedback from this writers collective that just started. And out back in L.A., today I'm in New York. But it was so strange. And I think this is where the healing and the art process is just so complicated. But I'm writing, I submit these pages. It's stories of early on in college. So when I was 18, And it's about, you know, my first heartbreak. And it's weird because I try a lot more not to editorialize with the voice of what I would know now or what I would do now in those situations. Like, I want, low key, I want this book to read, series, whatever it ends up being. I wanted to read, like, the Summer I Turned Pretty series, because the amount of times oh my God, Alondra, my best friend, she literally walked in to my apartment the other day and I had the Summer I Turned Pretty on, and she's like, "Davey, how many times have you seen this?" And I'm like, "I don't know, Alondra, at least 8 times. Because we've all had a Conrad in our lives. Team Conrad. No, actually Team Belly. But I want that voice, right? Because I do, like, I am such an advocate for 18, 19-year-old voice. Like, I love validating that young girl's experience, because it is real and it is painful and it is beautiful. But what happened with these pages I submitted to the group, I was trying so hard not to bring in 28-year-old Davey that apparently I lost the humor that I have. Guys, if we can make a vote here of if I'm funny or not, I don't actually care if you think I'm funny or not. But they were like, "Davey, you are funny. And there are certain things in here that should be in your pages." And it was because I was asking certain questions or I was giving feedback. And it was just like, I don't know, I guess, like, it came through a little bit that 18-year-old Davey was excited that a boy liked her, but it didn't come through of, like, what the chaos in my actual mind was that when I was 18 and a boy liked her. And, like, even just, like, because, and then what was really cool was people in the group were saying, "Come on, Davey, that's such a universal experience of, like, your friend taking your phone and texting a person back. Like, where's the part where it's like, OMG, how many Y's do I use for okay? Or is this emoji too weird to send?" And it really doesn't actually matter what emoji you send or how many Y's you send. If someone likes you, they will like you. And it's as simple as that. If they don't, they will show it. And there's no reason to question it. Like, it's just really that simple. And the voice that I don't really want in those pages is me telling you that. Like, I want it to come alive on the page. And why that experience in that writer's community, and this is why community is so important for our art, but also for our healing and, you know, claiming our self-worth, is it reminds you that those little moments of me running around, screaming around my dorm when I was 18, crying, like, actually tears, that my roommate took my phone to text this guy back, like, that's really important for your self-love. Because it's like, to look at that and recognize that, oh my God, thank God I don't need to act like that anymore, is just a relief. And I think that's been really special. And then what's really even been more special is how I've been able to come to that unconditional love and comfortability for the relationship I'm in now. Shout out Thomas. I mean, it's so strange. Like, even last week I had a guest on that was talking about stepping into our own power as it relates to our voice. So yes, whether it was high school, whether it was college, or even now me in a bar and someone puts on a song, I am really loud. I told my cousin this morning as I was getting ready, I don't think I'm as loud as I used to be. I actually genuinely think my voice has changed, but there is, yeah, I'm loud. It's been problems for me sometimes, but at the same time, is it because of bias? Maybe. Is it because I'm loud? Yes. But being in the dining hall and people being like, I don't like that girl because she's so loud. Like, maybe don't judge me. But like, also, I understand if it's early in the morning and I'm a lot. But it's part of my sparkle. But as far as like my relationship with Thomas, you know, we're going on 6 years and I've grown in so many ways and it doesn't come without its challenges. But from the moment I met him, he's allowed me to be myself. And I mean, there was even one point with a group of people and I was just being silly and dancing around and probably being loud. But this one person said to him at one point, they were like, oh my God, like, why are you letting her be that way? Like, calm her down. And I didn't know this, but like he got defensive over me and not in like a jealous, insane way or like, you know, other past experiences I've had in my life. But he was like, why would I do that? Like, why would I want her to be anything but herself? And for the type of person that I am and the communication styles that I exude, it's really important for me to be with someone like that. And when I think about probably, you know, there's so many small moments that make up the magic in our relationship. But one in particular, when I was interviewing this woman the other day on the show, when we were talking about voice, and she was actually giving tips of what she does when she works with her clients. And she gave like 3 or 4. And she was like, if you don't have time for anything else before a speaking gig or something where you're presenting things, try to do this. And she was telling us to put our hand over our heart. And to be honest, think of like a moment of calm. I would honestly have to go back and replay the episode. But all I know, it was advice on kind of finding that like inner stillness and that inner moment of self-worth and healing and love. And the only thing that I could think of was, and I started getting emotional in the podcast, but it's actually worked for me a lot this last week. And yes, here's another freaking episode I'm going to mention golf. But even right before I take a swing for golf, I took a deep breath, closed my eyes, and I thought of this moment when I was driving Tom back to his house after we were watching a movie at my parents' house. I was living with my parents at the time. Yes, my parents were still strict after college. I had to drive Tom home. He couldn't sleep over. That's changed in 6 years too. But I think of this moment when I'm putting on my shoes, putting on my coat. I'm wearing like baggy sweatpants. They might be his. They might be mine. Whatever. They're super baggy sweatpants. Before Tom, I was in a really fucking emotionally abusive relationship that the guy didn't want me wearing baggy sweatpants because they weren't sexy enough. Like, bullshit. Screw that guy. But I was wearing baggy sweatpants because I just didn't care anymore. But I turn around and Tom is looking at me like I am wearing a wedding dress. I kid you not. Like, he was looking at me like I was the most beautiful thing on this planet. And I was like looking at him like, what's wrong with you? What are you looking at? Like, and he goes, your sweatpants, like, they're so awesome. And I was like, what is actually wrong with this man? I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you look so cuddly and cute. And I was like, and of course I didn't act this very like nonchalant and being like, what's wrong with you? I really did take a deep breath. I smiled really, really softly. And then I gave him a really big hug because I think after all those dark times that I experienced in college and coming out of college, it was really freaking healing. And of course, I wish I was the girl that like my inner calm could be something in relation with myself and only me and only my autonomy. But it's not. It's just not. Okay. It's Tom. It's Tom thinking I'm beautiful. And if that doesn't make me a feminist, then fuck it. But I don't know. I've held that moment a lot in the last week. And I think it will continue to be a moment that, like, when I am really nervous and I'm freaking the fuck out and I put my hand over my heart, like, I will think of Tom's face because it was really special to have that moment of safety. And I think that is a really important part of our sparkle, too, is that safety. And it's a really important part of healing that inner child and thinking about, like, what did you want to be or who did you want to be when you grew up? For me, like, the distinct memory was playing Monopoly with my family and drawing the artist card and it being like, oh, you're only going to make $40,000 a year. And I absolutely traded I can't remember if I traded the doctor card for the artist card once, and my mom and my dad were like, what are you doing? Or if it was the other way around, like, I drew the artist card and they were like, uh-oh, like, you're gonna lose the game of life. Oh, sorry, not Monopoly, the game of life, not Monopoly. Either way, that game is annoying too. And then I, like, swapped it with the doctor card later because I actually wanted to win, and, like, the contrast of that is so interesting. But I remember every time I played the game of life, win or lose, I wanted to be the artist. And it was really funny because it's not like I showed interest in like painting or anything. I wanted to be a fashion designer for the longest time. And that just translated to a shopping issue. But yeah, like, I think what was funny was growing up, like, and it's not a bad thing. I think sports is it is the foundation that makes me who I am. It's what I want my kids to have. But I think there just wasn't a perception of what being an artist means. And that can mean being a writer. That can be nowadays making content, making a podcast. I mean, art is whatever you want it to be, right? And I do remember coming home from school one time. I got a D in art class. I don't know how I did it. And that was the only D my dad wasn't mad about, right? Like, when I got a D in math, like, I was pulled out of a cross-country meet by his accord, not the principal or the teacher's accord, but, right? But, like, when I brought that D home for art, he was like, yeah, don't worry about that. That's just up to the judgment of the teacher, and that doesn't mean anything. I truthfully don't know how I got a D in art, though, but I remember it because that is when I think the first time I coined, instead of C's get degrees, Davy gets degrees. And I definitely only have my degree because of D's. But if you get a D in art, don't worry, you can still be an artist. I don't know. I think what's so funny about, like, your frontal lobe developing after 25 is really you start to have, there's a lot of days I hate myself, but you start to also have a lot of love for yourself. And it's not just I like myself, or it's not this dramatic, like, oh my God, I hate myself, my life is over. But it's also not like I love myself, I can rule the world. Like, don't get me wrong, I have those days where I'm like, I'm the queen of this shit. And then there's days where I'm like, oh, this is really hard. But I think what it comes down to is finding the things. Yes, for me right now, I'm in my golf girl era. But when I've had bad days in this last like year or so, like, that's what I go do, because it's taught me, even just like unlocking that like special moment of self-worth that I think about when I swing, or the fact that like my trajectory to becoming a pro golfer is, you know, I might have to give up this podcast, and I think I might choose this podcast over my professional golf career. But it's given me the opportunity to chase something that is different and is really just a mental challenge and exercise. And it's not that I don't get that with running anymore. I do, but my sparkle looks different sometimes day to day, sometimes hour by hour. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't have a routine and almost like a formula for unlocking this creative process. But going back to my earlier point, you really don't know what that unrevealed sparkle is until you try. And the similarity between all of these different interests and passions that I've had from childhood to now is storytelling. And whether it's at the driving range, at my laptop, on a run, in interviews, building a brand, like, story is the only thing that's ever helped me figure it out. Whether it's my own story, someone else's, making up a story to get myself through the next day. Like, that's what it is. And so sparkle and someone's sparkle is all of those things. It's beyond your happiness, your passion, your self-worth. It's the vehicle that can help you have those things day in and day out. And I believe that's a right for everyone. I believe everyone can sparkle on, and that's why I have this show. And it hasn't been perfect getting there. It's not perfect making it, but it's as close to perfect as it gets. So sparkle on.